Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I'm sitting with Pam Patterson and Leno Rodvey in a woodland glade on a rough track that curves towards a rural road a couple of miles beyond La Remure in southwest France. They've just performed a collaborative piece entitled Listening on the Architecture of Aging as their contribution to the Maid of Walking gathering of artists in August and September 2017. The two of them have been working independently as solo artists and their collaboration as Artifacts for more than 30 years. Both have mobility issues, and Lena is also visually impaired. They have differing experiences in using a cane to aid walking. The discussion explores aspects of collaboration, creativity, and reflection as we explore how their collaborative practice has evolved. The recording begins with Lena speaking. How long have the two of you been working together and collaborating as Artifacts?
We started Artifacts around 1983, and we are from Toronto in Canada, and we started with one of our first pieces. It was a theater piece, wasn't it? And then evolved into performance art, a theatrical performance piece.
It was actually for Partisan Gallery, and it was actually, because you might be thinking of Ghost Trio, which was the one that was a theatrical piece. Yeah. But the first one was Entrapment, and we were actually looking, I mean, when I sort of embarrassingly look back at it, because we were working a lot with sort of text and concepts around how women are represented. It was kind of didactic, to be honest. And we created this sort of women's body environment. And at the time, when we first came together, I had just finished, I think, a degree in theater, and Lena, you just finished a degree in fine arts. Mm-hmm. So we were, in a sense, coming out of very specifically and very different trainings.
And trying to find ways to talk between those.
And you weren't actually performing in the early ones. So I remember for this one, for Entrapment, I was literally in, was it a white bag or something
that we projected onto that,
and then Lena projected on it. Mm-hmm. And we also had this fabulous technician who ended up working for Robert Lepage, so we lost him, but he did amazing things with the space and stuff, so it was great fun. But I don't think it was really until 1987 that we actually started to both really perform.
And to start the process that has evolved into what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at the Banff Center.
And how long ago was that?
30 years.
It's 1987.
1987.
Mm-hmm. I remember it because soon after I was pregnant with my daughter, and then I stayed on to head a department at the Banff Center. But, yeah.
Okay, so we're here in La Remure, which is in southwest France, which is quite a long way from where you're from. And you've just done a piece, which has taken a couple of days.
3 days.
And the piece was called?
Listening on the Architecture of Aging.
And having been involved so much with women's work, is that now moving on to work around aging? That's a new topic or trajectory, or have you always been involved in aging?
It comes out of our interest in dealing with women's issues, and aging particularly can be a women's issue, where women are judged according to their age. And so we look at that in terms of trying to make it a more positive, owning that and putting aside that criticism that comes against women in general.
And part of it for me has been that I've also been involved in some research specifically on aging, because I've just curated a show which is actually opening this weekend, which is called Coming of Age. So for that, for example, I read Simone de Beauvoir's Coming of Age and Germaine Greer's work on aging as well. And I think through that research, we were trying to look at what is it that's different for a man who ages and for a woman who ages. But I think to backtrack a little bit, too, I think when you think of the work that we did in the 80s, which I think was much more didactic, and we were experimenting. I mean, mm-hmm. we were doing the street work. We did the, we mentioned, I think, earlier in another discussion, we were doing this piece called Female Laundry, where we did our laundry in downtown Toronto in front of the Stock Exchange and hung clothes to dry and did ironing. And then we did Madame X from Planet X, which was great fun, where I played this visiting dignitary. Lena was sort of the attaché from Planet X. And we had a friend, François-Régis Clemfer, who was bilingual, who was about 4 feet tall and dressed in a pinstripe suit. And he was the Minister of Foreign Objects. And so we visited the Art Gallery of Ontario and the Royal Ontario Museum. And then Entrapment and also Ghost Trio, which Lena mentioned, which was a theatrical piece that we worked, we didn't perform in. We actually worked with actors.
Well, I was going to ask, that was the next thing I was going to ask, mm-hmm. was that have you always been the performers of your own work, or have you brought other people in to perform your mm-hmm. work? How's the process evolved to the point where it is now?
Well, I think since Ghost Trio, where we did use other people to act in, and we dealt with...
We did the Female Laundry, too, at Winchester Street Theatre with performers.
Oh, you're right. Yes,
so I think it wasn't probably until maybe the early 90s, maybe in the 90s, where we started to do solo... Well, solo in the sense between the two of us doing it again.
That was where we both... Well, the access to the process where we
both... Yeah, isn't it funny after so many years you try and remember? We need to have a written CV so we can see. I think you're right. But the other thing that's been happening, which is quite interesting, and I think it came up in discussion here, which may be kind of the transition in terms of where our work is going, because we're in flux right now, is this whole idea of the witness. So one of the things that we did do was we did an exhibition slash performance at a small little process gallery in Toronto on Queen Street, and we worked with a photographer. And we had been working with Miklos Legrady for a while. And then I think it evolved from an event that Lena and I were also both curating that we realized that he was actually a performer, that he was integral to the work as a witness, and we got into very interesting discussions about how he also reinterpreted the work and how that fed back to us. So one of the things we were saying, wouldn't it be nice if we could just do this here with Miklos?
But also with performance, the documentation is such an integral part of how it gets remembered and how it gets understood. Because if you're not here at the performance, and maybe there are 10 people, maybe there are 2 people, it's the documentation, the video, the photographs that are what remain. But that is through... But so what we're doing is just recognizing that that comes through the eye of...
Comes through the medium.
Not just the medium, but the person behind the medium.
So they're choosing.
Yes,
they're
so choosing. Therefore Miklos has been very much part of this performance because we create something, and then he creates something from that.
Of all those pieces that you've performed or written, how many of those have been involved with walking and being outdoors?
Was it 7A11D? We were part of the 7A... We did a 7A11D thing, as Lena said, in 2000 at 401 Richmond Street. And I think so we would have been, you know... This is like almost 20 years ago, so we would have been in our mid-40s. I remember one event because we were walking through the corridors of this building and traveling throughout the building carrying these huge black rocks. And we were going up and down the stairs. And so it was durational. And I think we were doing, 2 or 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
Finally, on the second day, Len and I looked at each other and said, let's take the elevator. So the walking was becoming challenging. It was just brutal.
But also interesting, in any durational piece, as in any long walking performance, you don't realize what the effect will be until you do it. Mm. You can have the idea, I'm going to walk for 3 hours, I'm going to walk 10 kilometers, but then when you're actually doing it, that's when you feel mm-hmm. the effect of that.
And the interest for us, because we're highly reflective in terms of the work we do, is looking at that. So if we were to name our research within a more conventional framework, it's phenomenological. So in a sense, we set a phenomenon, we create a performance specific to that space, to that phenomenon, whatever it is, and then we observe ourselves as we move. So to say walking per se, it's difficult because we also look at walking and walking but not walking.
Well, also what you're working towards or appear to be is looking more in terms of aging and mobility, because mm-hmm. both of you at different times have to use a cane. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different way of moving. I remember you mentioning that you picked up a cane, you found it made you more steady. Would you like to try and explore that a little bit and where that might take you?
Well, for me, I have sort of visually impaired. I have difficulty seeing. And I also injured my foot, of course, a month before coming to this walking festival. And I hadn't used a cane. I resisted it. And partly because it was my own ageism. It's something that older people do. But when I started using the cane, and it was only recently, I found out that it gave me greater stability. It gave me greater independence. I could move on my own. I did not have to worry as much about where I was stepping, leaning on somebody to walk. So it was actually a strengthening and empowering thing to have the cane, which at the same time reads as, she's old.
And what about yourself?
And for me, it's been an issue around disability. I mean, I was in a wheelchair just after my mother died, which is around 2004. And I had to confront disability also when I was doing my PhD. I've had an ongoing autoimmune disease. So I had to do my entire PhD orally. I dictated it to someone because at that time I could not use my hands. So for me, I actually embrace aging. I sort of make fun of myself sometimes, but it's like, this is the way it is. Once I lost a breast, and once, I got eye cancer, and then when I was in a wheelchair for a year, it's like, okay, all the horrible things have probably happened. So for me, it's more about the fear, not so much of aging, but of being alone and helpless. There's a group of us in the county that met for supper, and we're talking about this, and we were all saying our greatest fear is that we will die and someone will find our bodies bloated in the middle of a living room somewhere. Which then really fascinates me as an artist, because I'm really fascinated with this idea of decay and abjection. So in some ways, I kind of enjoy, I'm bad in that way, I sort of enjoy playing the woman with the one breast and, really exposing my scar or farting in public or something. And when I did this essay for Coming of Age, I actually wrote little excerpts from Simone de Beauvoir and also from Germaine Greer. And a lot of them were quotes, funny little quotes from literature about, I now have permission to belch and fart. And I remember my grandfather at 90 saying to me, now I am 90. People need to come to me to speak to me. So that's part of it. And in terms of the cane, it's more of a protective device for me. It's a form of, I don't want to say aggression, but it's a form of defense. So I don't use it a lot when I'm in the country. But when I'm in a situation where I'm with a group of people, like I hate going to openings because I can't stand. But I have to take it or I'll fall over. And I just end up getting pissed off. So either I find a chair or I lean on the cane for a while, and then I just get pissed off and leave.
Yeah. So the piece that you've done here has been a duration for both of you. The distance you've walked is, a couple of hundred metres or 300 metres. But latterly, you've just dragged a chair. Each of you has dragged a chair mm-hmm. across rough ground, mm-hmm. walking towards each other. Would you like to try and explain a little bit about the work?
Well, I think it's interesting because this is a beginning place for us, so it would be interesting to talk to you in 5 years just to see where it went. The evolution for me over the last 3 days, which has actually been quite interesting, is recognizing how different our own disabilities are.
How much is it the environment is disabling you, and how much is it your own disablement?
For me, it was my own disables, yeah.
But do you choose environments now? Do you quite careful about where you select to do a performance or an event?
Always. not just now, but always, mm-hmm. you know. So this environment reflects our themes, but also what we are able to navigate. And this, I think, was just far enough. It wasn't too much of a hill. It wasn't too rough.
But I didn't even think of that.
I didn't either, but I'm just thinking now.
It's interesting.
No, but I wonder whether it's processing in the back of your heads. Just that's the way it is, the way you think. Because you must be always thinking about the sites in which you're going to perform anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
But now are you thinking about them with that extra element, if that makes sense?
We wouldn't do stairs again, carrying rocks up and down stairs.
No, absolutely not.
Because the listener are probably wondering where the sound is, you know, or the background is, and we can say we're in an avenue or a little strip of trees with a track that runs through, which rises 10 metres over its length, and that's about 400 metres, isn't it? And the two of you have walked towards each other.
And there's a bend.
That's key. There's a bend. So you couldn't see the other at either
or the
end.
The end of the road, either end of the road.
What's interesting, though, is that on the Monday, we didn't really... I mean, we did walk at the end, but the actual action of the performance was us simply being at either end. To kind of end it, I walked down to join Lennon and we left. That was not so much integral to the action itself. So in a sense, when we picked it up today, we picked it up at the ends. And then for me, it was interesting just to see where we would end up kind of in the, quote, middle. That's where it became interesting because we had done some processing work since Monday around what our individual needs are. I mean, I need to keep moving or I fall over. I can't stand for long. But I don't have the vision issues.
So I have to go slowly because I have to be constantly checking what the ground is and unevennesses.
Can you see the ground that you're walking on?
I can see the ground, but I can't see clearly. I mean, your face is a blur. Depth is terrible. I only have vision in one eye.
And how long has that been deteriorating?
26 years.
So you've been adjusting to it all the time.
When you mentioned adjustment, one of the words that came up in our discussions together on Sunday was compensation. Yeah. And how, as we go through, in both of our cases, through our 40s and 50s, we had other kinds of strategies we could use in order to compensate. And I think that's one of the things around aging that becomes problematic, is that the mechanism for compensation is no longer possible.
We had a wonderful metaphor for that we talked about before coming here. And it was like, you know, you're heaping up stones or logs. And you heap them up and you heap them up. And then suddenly you reach a point where they don't stay in place anymore. And the top one falls off. The whole thing falls apart. And that's what it's like with compensating. For me, I can hide. I can pretend that I can see. I can pass. I can just ask questions rather than reading. And then at some point, it becomes very obvious that I can't see and I can't hide it anymore. And I think that, you know, we both deal with that you want to pass but at some point you can't. And then we're embracing what happens there, that transition.
I wanted to talk briefly, too, just about the nature of our collaboration in that we also both do solo work. Like, for example, my solo work is around sort of disability and trauma, Our Toes, Theater of Cruelty kind of work. But what ends up happening for us, and I think we made this decision and recognized this decision, as you said, probably in 87, is that what we create here to us is true collaboration. So that this work would not be possible if it wasn't for both of us. So it's not like one person makes something and the other person makes something. That this entity of artifacts is only possible because of our relationship. And it's a very specific aesthetic that's evolved in terms of this relationship. So the way I work with Lena and the way Lena works with me is I don't think I could do it with anyone else. And that the work would be very different. And the other piece for me that's important is that I respect that. So, for example, if I apply for an Ontario Arts Council grant under my name, I do not use artifacts images because that has nothing to do with my own practice. So there is a very distinct difference for me between the solo and the collaboration.
And your own solo work, what's your...
I've been dealing more with history and personal history, trying to find metaphors and ways of dealing with that. Also, of my disability, and that gets into it too. You know, what is hidden and how one can reveal that.
You're also much more of a visual artist.
And I'm just thinking, yes, yeah. Like visually. So I mean, I also think in terms of, there was one piece where I did where I was dealing with like rocks and stones, which are, you know, like for me, like memory, history objects. But then I did drawings of myself, of my face, handed out one of those to all the audience so they could take with them. So I wanted to give something to me. I want there to be some kind of interaction with the audience. So that sort of process is very important for me.
When you are collaborating, mm-hmm. because you've worked so long together, you probably anticipate each other's thoughts, no?
No, but I don't think so. But we can sort of intuit with one another when something is right.
Yes.
Like, and we'll come up with an idea.
Do you start with a kind of visual frame coming from you and then...
Not anymore.
Or do we start with a dramatic or...
An idea, a space?
It can be anything sometimes. It's whatever sparks us. And then what evolves is what evolves in conversation.
And is one of you servant and the other mistress?
No. I think it changes. Mm-hmm. It sort of shifts. At some point, Lena will run with an idea and I'll kind of support it and vice versa. So I don't feel that. I think perhaps... I do a lot of the written work, but that's because I'm an academic.
But I think the two of you just to have been working over such a long period.
It's really hard to separate it.
Yeah, yeah. And B, there aren't that many knife wounds I can see or scars from battles you've had. But
no.
have there been scars and battles that, you know?
I don't think so, really. Because I think part of it... I mean, I've gone through some difficult times because I've lost a family and I've been through major health issues. And we've all had our traumas. And I think that life stuff can create challenges.
But once we
focus on the work,
yes,
it takes us away from all.
And how far do you live apart?
300 kilometers.
Wow. We used to live in the same city. But also we keep that personal and the working together separate. So we can complain to one another about our personal lives. But that's separate, you know, if we're working and we're talking about our work, that's separate. It's a different space.
And you've been really disciplined about that.
Not disciplined. It's just what we do.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was my training in theater. I used to teach movement for actors. And before I would begin to teach, I would open the studio and say to everyone, you know, put your stuff out, and we'd close the door. So I think in terms of how both of us have been trained, how we've influenced each other in terms of that training, is that has become incorporated into our practice. It is a bit challenging that sometimes I work at a different pace than Lena will work at, so that might be challenging. But we negotiate as best we can.
And always process has been important.
Yeah, respect that.
Yes, that the way we get to the end is as important as the end.
Yeah. In fact, I doubt if there's even an end sometimes. Yeah.
Where it is just access to the process.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Artifacts, Pam Patterson and Lena Rodve. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martins of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.